New York City lies roughly 2,500 miles east of Diablo Canyon in California, and 200 miles northeast of Washington, D.C., as the crow flies. Not close enough to either location to yet feel the physical effects from the detonation of the nuclear bombs. But from a psychological standpoint, New York City, America's largest metropolis, erupts into panic and chaos. With news of nuclear attacks spreading across the world like wildfire, millions of New Yorkers fear their city to be a next target. At the cable news network studio in Hudson Yards, employees flee the building with an urgency not seen since World Trade Center employees tried desperately to escape the impending collapse of the Twin Towers on the 11th of September. A few journalists have stayed behind in the newsroom in this scenario. Those remaining at their posts scour social media sites still functioning, furiously searching for content to share with the world. Engineers in the tech room copied the Point Butch and Cattle Run share a TMS video from social media and it plays in a loop on screen. Like Jules Nordit a TMS 9/11 video of the first airplane crashing into the North Tower, this image is an origin point for war. No CNN reporter in DC answers his or her phone. Cell service is down. AO Northern Virginia has well over 60% of the world TMS data centers. America TMS First Cyber Chief, retired Brigadier General Gregory Toohill, tells us. No one from the White House Press Secretary or TMS office can be reached. Messages for the CNN liaison at the Pentagon go directly to voicemail. Same with the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Space Force, Department of Homeland Security, and FBI. Before X buckled and crashed, cell phone videos were flooding social media platforms. Some of the visuals were screen-grabbed here at CNN. But with one fact check left in the building, authentication becomes an impossible job. How to discern images of reality from the horrifying AI movie clips flooding the internet? The fact checker stares at pictures of burned, blackened corpses. At people that do not look human, or even real. As it was in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August 1945, so it is in America now, people without faces, people without skin, naked people running, their clothes and bodies on fire, a man holding a dead child, a dead horse in the street, a teenager with a severed body part in hand. The anchor who has stayed here in Hudson Yards reads from a teleprompter, trying to keep his composure while beginning to process what is actually going on. Anchor, we understand that a nuclear bomb has apparently struck a nuclear power plant in California, 165 miles north of Los Angeles. His voice cracks. Anchor, and also apparently we just don't yet TMT know for certain just seconds, or minutes, ago we don't yet TMT have confirmation of a second nuclear bomb struck Washington, D.C., an emotional Walter Cronkite almost cried on live TV after President John F. Kennedy was murdered. After the Hindenburg Zeppelin exploded into flames, Herb Morrison screamed, A-O-O, the humanity. A how to process this? The anchor looks down as a wireless emergency alert appears on his cell phone. He looks back up at the camera. Anchor, FEMA has issued this warning. He holds up his cell phone to the camera. It reads, U.S. under nuclear attack, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. 35 minutes, Diablo Canyon, California. At the Diablo Canyon power plant, powerful updrafts suck radioactive dirt and debris up into the growing mushroom stem and cloud. Towering 30,000 feet high, this terrifying aberration is now visible from vista points up and down the California coast, including at Vandenberg Space Force Base, home to 4 of the 40 remaining interceptor missiles. Vandenberg Space Force Base is located roughly 35 miles to the southeast of where the Devla TMS scenario is underway. The surrounding hills are on fire. Skyscraper height flames devour forests, killing wildlife and subsuming everything in its path. Superheated winds from burning trees generate fire tornadoes with hundreds of mile-an-hour winds, knocking over trees and carrying car-sized burning debris into adjacent canyons, fueling new fires everywhere. For tens of thousands of California.ns, abject panic takes hold as Diablo Canyon at EMS emergency sirens are stretching out more than a dozen miles in all directions a begin screeching alarm. There is mayhem, everywhere. Some 143,000 people reside in the 10-mile radius of Diablo Canyon at EMS 12 protective action zones, all now trying to evacuate, all at once. From Pismo Beach to Los Ozos, everyone is desperate to escape death by smoke, fire, and radiation poisoning. The outlook is grim. They are all trying to escape by way of a historic highway that is almost 100 years old. Diablo Canyon, Nuclear Accident Escape Routes. U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, History Lesson Number 7, Proud Profit War Game. In 1983, at a high point in nuclear stockpile insanity when there were nearly 60,000 nuclear weapons ready to be launched, 35,804 in Russia, 23,305 in the USA, President Reagan ordered a simulated war game, codenamed Proud Prophet, to explore the outcome and effects of a nuclear war. The Proud Prophet war game was designed by a man named Thomas Schelling, a Cold War intellectual with economics degrees from Harvard and Berkeley. Schelling was a faculty member at the New England Complex Systems Institute, a think tank dedicated to the study of AI complex systems. Some complex systems exist in nature. Earth at EMS global climate. The human brain, a living cell, are examples of complex systems. Others are made by humans, and contingent upon machines alike the power grid, the internet, and the U.S. Department of Defense. Thomas Schelling, TMS specialty, was applying game theory to complex systems. He used mathematical models to discern and predict outcomes. He was taken very seriously. In 2005, when Schelling was in his 80s, he was awarded the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences, with Robert J. Orman, for A. having advanced our understanding of conflict and cooperation through game theory analysis. A.O. The Power to Hurt is Bargaining Power, A. Schelling famously wrote in his book Arms and Influence. A.O. to exploit it is diplomacy, a vicious diplomacy, but diplomacy. A. The goal of the classified Proud Prophet war game was to demonstrate what happens when diplomacy fails, so when deterrence fails. To demonstrate to the highest ranking officers in the U.S. nuclear command and control system the various ways in which nuclear war could, and would, unfold after it began. Every day for 2 weeks in 1983, more than 200 people gathered at the National War College in Washington, D.C., to play the game, cloistered away inside a secure location to prevent leaks. The National War College is located inside the National Defense University, which is located just across the river from the Pentagon. Each day, to play the game, the Secretary of Defense would pick up a red phone and call the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to discuss various ideas in the different nuclear war scenarios put forth by Schelling. Schemes included everything from tactical nuclear strikes in a so-called limited nuclear war, to massive decapitation event scenarios. There were exercises with NATO and without NATO nuclear forces getting involved. There were scenarios where the US launched nuclear war preemptively, beginning with everyone at the Pentagon in a state of focused calm. There were exercises where nuclear war was launched in crisis mode. In full-on panic mode. With and without China entering the conflict. With and without the UK involved. Paul Bracken, a professor of political science at Yale, was one of the civilian individuals invited to participate in playing the classified nuclear war game. The results were horrifying, Bracken says. Over the course of 2 weeks, in every simulated scenario and despite whatever particularly triggering event started the war game, a nuclear war always ended the same way. With the same outcome. There is no way to win a nuclear war once it starts. There is no such thing as de-escalation. According to Proud Prophet, regardless of how nuclear war begins, it ends with complete Armageddon-like destruction. With the US, Russia, and Europe totally destroyed, with the entire northern hemisphere uninhabitable from fallout. With the death of, at minimum, a half billion people in the war at EMS opening salvo alone. Followed by the starvation and death of almost everyone who initially survived. A.O. The result was a catastrophe, A. Bracken recalls. A catastrophe A.F. that made all the wars of the past 500 years pale in comparison. A half billion human beings were killed in the initial exchanges, NATO was gone. So was a good part of Europe, the United States, and the Soviet Union. Major parts of the Northern Hemisphere would be uninhabitable for decades. Everyone left very upset. The results of Proud Profit remained unknown to the public for almost three decades, until 2012, when the war game was declassified. If you can call it declassification. Most pages looked like this. The 1983 Proud Profit 83 nuclear war game was a declassified in 2012. U.S. Department of Defense, there was an upside. Proud Profit at EMS declassification allowed people like Paul Bracken to discuss parts of it without violating the Espionage Act of 1917, even if in very general terms. From Bracken, we learn firsthand that military leaders at the time were wholly unprepared for the decisions they were going to have to make here, from the initial spark of nuclear war, to the last breath any of them would take. 14 years later, Vice President Al Gore asked Professor Bracken to lead a different kind of war game simulation, not a nuclear war game, but one involving a cyber attack on Wall Street. In the late 90s, VP Gore was worried the newly popular internet was making America's TMS banking system vulnerable to terrorist attack. His people asked me to set up a game, A. Bracken recalls of the Gore request. One that involved 75 military and civilian personnel, including bankers from Wall Street. The cloistered, classified room at the National War College was not available at the time. Someone from the financial firm Cantor Fitzgerald arranged for a banquet room at the World Trade Center, Bracken explains, in the top-floor restaurant with its magnificent, city-wide view. A restaurant known as Windows on the World. For 3 days in 1997, the group engaged in a highly classified, simulated war game. A cyber terror attack, their conclusion a drawn from the war game EO was basic, Bracken contends. EO moved data storage away from Manhattan. The Wall Street firms accelerated the movement of data storage to New Jersey and Long Island. A cheaper, safer, great. Except, A.O. what we didn't EMT figure out was the actual attack, A. Bracken laments. A.O. we didn't EMT think of driving an airplane into, there, building a where the game was being played. That is, flying a commercial airplane into the World Trade Center. 4 years later, 15 of the people who were playing that simulated war game were killed in the 9/11 terror attack at the World Trade Center. When two commercial airliners were flown into the two tall towers there, the Windows on the World restaurant, and both of the towers, were reduced to rubble and ash. After nuclear war, much of 21st century humankind will be just the same. There one moment, then gone. 36 minutes, U.S. Strategic Command Headquarters, Nebraska. 36 minutes, have passed in this scenario. The Stratcom commander is out the door, running toward the doomsday plane EO officially called the E-4B Night Watcher, a militarized, retrofitted Boeing 747 idling on the tarmac. The doomsday plane is always ready for takeoff or ready 24/7/365 to orchestrate a commander at EMS airborne escape. This is because the doomsday plane fights nuclear war from the air. It is springtime in Nebraska. The tarmac here is clear. No flooding, no hurricanes. The safe escape clock inside the underground bunker zeroed out minutes ago, but the Stratcom commander had to get the universal unlock code from the President of the United States. And now he has. The amount of time it takes to exit the Global Operations Center, run across the tarmac, and sprint up the jet bridge stairs of the doomsday plane and into the Defense Department at EMS war room in the sky is well rehearsed. A.O. have a certain amount of minutes, to get on that plane and for that plane to get off the ground, and to a safe distance before a nuclear weapon goes off here, ISTRATCOM Commander General Hyten told CNN in 2018. Inside the conference room on board the Doomsday plane, the commander straps himself in and rejoins the satellite comms with the nuclear command and control system commanders who remain alive. Still no word from the president. Still no word from the VP. The military has the football, STRATCOM knows this, and they know where the football is. Contained inside the satchel is a classified tracking system engineered to defeat EMP effects. The football is lying on the ground in a forested area in rural Boyds, Maryland. A quick reaction force has been dispatched from Camp David to locate and retrieve the football, and hopefully the president, but the QRF helicopter is still in the air and no one knows if the president is with the Milade, or if he and the CAT operator he is with got separated by bomb blast and wind drift. The tracking systems on Marine One ceased transmission 3 minutes ago. All cell signals from the passengers on board, and those who parachute jumped, ceased transmitting when the bomb detonated over DC. Localized EMP zeroed out everything in the overpressure zone. The Secretary of Defense and the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff were far enough out to remain flying. Now they are just minutes away from landing at Saitama. The Vice Chairman is on the call with STRATCOM via satellite phone. She waits for the commander to get oriented inside the war room on the Doomsday plane. The Doomsday plane got its name because it is the location from where the STRATCOM commander, or whoever is acting as such, will execute emergency orders during nuclear war. Each jet is hardened against electromagnetic pulse, and with mesh over the windows to prevent against potential breakage by shock wave. The satellite-based communications system on the E-4B Nightwatch is designed to provide worldwide communications between senior military leaders and the joint force. The aircraft can fly in circles over the country for 24 or more hours at a time without refueling, dispatching nuclear launch codes to any leg of the triad, anywhere in the world. If its satellite comes go down nationally or globally, the Doomsday plane will use extremely high frequency, EHF, and very low frequency, VLF/LF, links with other aircraft in its fleet. This includes the E-6 Mercury aircraft, officially called the Take Charge and Move Out platform, a Cold War designed system that also functions as a last resort command center in the sky. Doomsday planes have equipment that allows the commander to launch, remotely from the air, all weapons in all three legs of the nuclear triad: submarines, bombers, and ECMS. Even after the systems at EM individual launch control centers have lost the ability to do so from the ground, the Doomsday plane takes off from the tarmac here at Utt Air Force Base at a maximum climb angle. The STRATCOM commander is briefed on the strike against the Pentagon, given bomb damage assessment and death toll and casualty estimates. He is briefed on the time to target for the 50-minute Men-3 ICBMs. He is briefed on the remaining time to launch for the Trident SLBMs. The commander is shown high-resolution images of Washington, D.C. These are digital composites being assembled in real time by advanced sensor systems on board unmanned aircraft flying over Ground Zero around Washington, D.C. for decades. Starting in the late 1940s, the Air Force practiced flying through nuclear mushroom clouds, using decorated combat pilots like Colonel Hervey Stockman to develop tradecraft. Now drones do this job, unmanned vehicles controlled from a joint NSA-NRO facility, not in DC. An installation so highly classified, sharing its location would be a violation of the Espionage Act. The sensor systems on board include the DARPA-conceived Autonomous Real-Time Ground Ubiquitous Surveillance (AUSU) system, designed to provide battlefield commanders with situational awareness on the ground. In 2013, the Argus infrared system could identify a person wearing a wristwatch from over 2 miles away, its name an homage to the ancient Greek beast Argus Panops, an all-seeing monster with 100 eyes. The Stratcom commander stares at ghastly images of where the mighty US Pentagon once stood. The visuals are devastating. At the dawn of the nuclear age, the Joint Chiefs of Staff were forewarned that nuclear bombs were a threat to mankind and to civilization. A that if used against cities, they could depopulate vast areas of the Earth at EMS surface. A and now, the Stratcom commander is one of the first Americans to see this prediction come true. He sees it from above, with his own eyes. 37 minutes, undisclosed location, Pacific Ocean, thousands of miles from Washington, D.C., in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, in an undisclosed location known only to its commander and crew, sirens on the USS Nebraska blare. All 155 submariners on board this vessel remain intensely focused on one thing and one thing only, nuclear launch. The USS Nebraska is a nuclear-powered, nuclear-armed submarine singularly capable of unleashing 20 times more destruction than all the explosives used in World War II, including both atomic bombs dropped on Japan. Like all Ohio-class submarines, the Nebraska is silent, undetectable, and always ready for launch. In this moment, launch is seconds away. We have the power to destroy an adversary at EMS military, infrastructure, and everything in between, Submariner Mark Levin told listeners in a Defense Department podcast. A survivable system for carrying out a retaliatory nuclear attack. A survivable, A meaning the submarine survives. The crew on the USS Nebraska is highly skilled and uniquely trained. They are accustomed to traveling deep underwater for 70 days at a time. No texts, no emails, no radio contact, no radar signature. US Ohio-class submariners pride themselves as being the ultimate nuclear deterrent. Only an insane person would want to be on the receiving end of its wrath. A Trident submarine-launched ballistic missile, SLBM, launches from the USS Nebraska. U.S. Navy, Petty Officer First Class Ronald Guthridge. When the crew gets the order to launch nuclear weapons, it follows those orders precisely as rehearsed. The launch order from the President was authenticated and decoded by two junior officers. This string of coded data includes information about plan of action and timing of action, about which targets to strike, the precise coordinates involved either and when. The action begins. Of all the complex, multi-step protocols and procedures in U.S. nuclear command and control, the firing of Trident nuclear missiles is designed to be simple and fast. The crew moves the 18,750-ton submarine into position, to its subsurface launch depth of around 150 feet. The commanding officer, the executive officer, and two junior officers each individually authenticate the President at EMS order one last time. The captain and his executive officer open the onboard double safe. The two individuals retrieve two items from inside the safe. A sealed authenticator system card and a fire control key are each removed. The key is inserted in its requisite slot, then turned. The missiles are armed and ready to fire. There are 20 active missile tubes on each Ohio-class nuclear submarine. Each tube contains a Trident 2D5 missile. 8 of the 20 missiles will fire. Each of the 8 missiles is armed with 4 separate nuclear warheads in its nose cone. Each warhead carries a 455-kiloton nuclear bomb. The commanding officer authorizes the launch of the 8 Trident missiles. The weapons officer pulls the trigger that launches the first missile. An explosive charge flash vaporizes a tank of water at the base of the missile tube. The pressure of the expanding gas drives the missile out of the submarine through a diaphragm at the top of the launch tube, jettisoning the rocket out the tube, out the body of the submersible, and away from the submarine with enough momentum to reach the surface. A little more than 1 second after launch, the first Trident missile breaches the waterline. As it clears the surface of the Pacific, its first stage rocket motor ignites. Rising up into the air, boost phase begins. 15 seconds pass. The second Trident missile emerges from its tube. And the next one comes 15 seconds after that. The fittingly simple order goes like this: Missile 1, Missile 2, Missile 3, Missile 4, Missile 5, Missile 6, Missile 7, Missile 8. 8 missiles, each carrying 4455 kiloton nuclear warheads, for a total of 32 warheads that will soon destroy multiple targets across North Korea. The first stage on each rocket will burn for 65 seconds, followed by another 14 minutes of travel time to target. As is the case with an ICBM, an SLBM cannot be recalled. What is done is done. 37 minutes, 30 seconds. Joint Operations Intelligence Center, Raven Rock Mountain Complex, Pennsylvania. Deep inside the belly of the Raven Rock Mountain Complex, officers working nuclear support operations in DISA TMS Joint Operations Intelligence Center fire off emergency action commands. FPCOM Delta, Force Protection Condition 1, the highest alert level for an attack against a military installation, is now officially in effect. This is enacted separately from DEFCON 1, which presumes an attack on the civilian population. Department of Homeland Security instructs Customs and Border Protection, the Department of Transportation, and the Coast Guard to close all U.S. borders. The Federal Aviation Administration issues SCOTANA, the plan for the security control of air traffic and air navigation aids under emergency conditions, grounding all aircraft. At all military installations around the nation, garrison gates close. Base security forces initiate 100% ID card check protocols. Rapid base containment by local military and civilian forces begins. At U.S. military installations around the world, geographic combatant commanders enforce FPCOM Delta measures, in a futile attempt to secure and protect their areas of responsibility from attack. Futile because nuclear attacks are impossible to defend against. Still, lockdown has begun around the world. America is at nuclear war with North Korea. 38 minutes, Ground Zero, Ring 1 and Ring 2. In Washington, D.C., Ring 1 is a holocaust. Ring 1 is that 9-mile diameter area around Ground Zero where engineered structures have changed shape and collapsed. Casualties near 100%, everyone is dead or dying. Buildings that once stood upright here are the White House, the Capitol, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Departments of Justice and State, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the U.S. Treasury, the Library of Congress, the National Archives, the Metropolitan Police Department, the U.S. Departments of Agriculture, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, the National Academy of Sciences, the American Red Cross, Constitution Hall, to name but a few. Are they have been obliterated, shattered, blown apart, cracked open, knocked down, and set alight. All of the human beings who were standing, sitting, walking, waiting, or working in each and every one of these buildings just a few minutes ago are no more. The iconic structures built of chiseled granite and marble, of steel and stone, with Parthenon-styled columns and neoclassical facades, if they once seemed indomitable, they are now just piles of rubble and debris. Wreckage of war. Shavings and fragments of things that once were. Consider the tiny sliver of land that was the National Mall, the long grassy park known as America TMS Front Yard. A park visited by over 25 million people each year. A once popular place for music concerts and festivals, for picnics and protests, for joggers and tourists and newlyweds. It represents an infinitesimal amount of what is now gone. 5 minutes ago, this landscaped park was lined with history museums and curious visitors. Now everything in all the Smithsonian museums are the dinosaur fossils, the botany and book collections, the paintings in the National Portrait Gallery, Muhammad Ali a TMS robe, all the people gazing curiously at these collections as they were there 1 minute, and a second later violently transformed into millimeter-sized pieces of ash. Ground Zero a TMS Ring 2 is ablaze. Ring 2 is the 15-mile diameter ring, an area where a vast majority of those not already dead are in the process of dying from third-degree burns. The nuclear bomber TMS 180 million degree Fahrenheit flash of X-ray light has ignited a mass fire that now begins to consume everything in this ring, and beyond. Millions of flammable items in Ring 2 have been set alight, all at once, like millions of matches dropped in dry grass. AO ignition is complicated, a Dr. Glenn McDuff tells us.